You're hearing G Like Junior, one of many great tracks off the new album Get It by Rick Holmstrom. Rick has played guitar with many bands through the years, backing West Coast blues and soul legends, including William Clark, Smokey Wilson, Johnny Dyer, and Booker T. In addition to a solo career as a fantastic guitarist, Rick has enjoyed a very long run backing the great Mavis Staples, who he's touring with again this year. My talk with Rick Holmstrom, coming up on Frets. Stay tuned. Listening to Frets with DJ Faye. No lessons, no technique info. I just talk to people who play guitar. Stay tuned. My guest today is Rick Holmstrom, who has played guitar in and with many bands over the years, backing West Coast blues and soul bands including William Clark, Smokey Wilson, Johnny Dyer, and Booker T, to a very long run with the great Mavis Staples, who he's touring with again this year. Rick, thanks so much for taking the time to talk today.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
Well, before your move to sunny California, you were born in a much different climate, Fairbanks, Alaska. How long did you live in Alaska?
Well, I lived until I graduated from high school. And I went to Southern California to go to college and would continue each summer to go home and work like construction jobs and stuff like that to make money to be able to go back to school in California. But yeah, I mean, I love Alaska and I've got lots of family and friends still living up there. And I bring my wife and kids up every summer for a week or so. But yeah, it's quite a bit different from where I'm at now, yeah, climate-wise.
I'll bet. Your father was in the broadcasting business. Was that in entertainment or news or what kind of broadcasting?
Both. I mean, he was a DJ and then he, and just a little AM radio station in Fairbanks. And then he went into TV and he did the 6 o'clock evening news, like the local broadcast on the TV station, one of the TV stations up there. Yeah. So I was around that all my life.
That's great. Well, what kind of music do you remember first being exposed to in those early days?
Probably the very first stuff I heard was the Beatles. My folks were only basically 20 and 21 years older than me. So they were real. I was the first kid. My mom was 20 when she had me. My dad was 21. So they were kids and the first movie I went to was one of the Beatles movies. I don't remember, maybe Hard Day's Night. I'm not sure. When I was I was just a newborn, fell asleep in the theater. But so the Beatles were all around. And but before that, my dad had been like a Elvis, Buddy Holly, Little Richard, that type of old rock and roll fan. So when we'd be listening to Roll Over Beethoven or some, you know, or I don't know which Little Richard songs did Paul McCartney sing? I can't remember.
Long Tall Sally. And
yeah. Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, my dad would say, hey, that's the Little Richard, check this out. And so I always knew that there was some kind of, you know, a song that happened before.
Right.
I had this feeling early on, like it doesn't just come out of thin air.
Right. Well, was guitar the first instrument you learned?
Yes. And I didn't really learn it. It was, I mean, I was constantly drumming on my desk at school with pencils and whatnot and getting in trouble. But the first instrument I had was a guitar. But it was more like I just learned some cowboy chords and stuff in around third grade. And it was just a toy in my room. You know, I never really got any good at it when I was little.
Well, after moving from Alaska to California, you started playing with a local blues group. Was that an existing band, or did you initiate that or form that band?
No, so I was, I played basketball in college at a small university of Redlands. And some friends of mine on the basketball team had a band, and they would play parties, like for beer at frat parties or wherever, battles of the bands and all that kind of stuff. The drummer wasn't enough, so for 3 years I'd go to these parties, and maybe at the end of the gig, one of the guys would lean his guitar up against his amp, and I'd say, "Hey, can I play a little bit?" And they'd see me playing and go, "Dude, why don't you play with us?" And the lead guitar player, his name is Roy Bauer, the lead guitar player was so good that I could hardly even play. But he graduated a year before me, or a year or two before me. And another friend of mine who also played, his name was Tom Nevins. He and I joined this band at the same time. We kind of revived it, you know, because it looked like it was dead. And we injected more of like that blues thing. Like we brought Jimmy Reed songs and Chuck Berry songs, and kind of like the stuff that the Stones were playing and the Beatles were playing when they first started. We brought that kind of stuff into it.
Yeah. So you were playing in bands, but I'm sure you were also getting out to hear live music in those days. Were you mostly drawn to blues and soul, or a lot of different types of music?
Definitely blues. I mean, being in that band, you know, I was just 20, 21 years old, just starting to learn how to play guitar. I played strictly rhythm, like all night long. I was just the guy that played rhythm. My friend Tom was a much better player and a great singer. But I started digging back further and further into stuff. And then when I would go to LA and try to find out, or try to dig and find the most authentic stuff I could. So I ended up in a lot of South Central blues clubs, you know, paying $3 or $5 at the door and getting a ticket that gave me like a fried chicken dinner and maybe one Budweiser or something. And I would milk that Budweiser all night if I could, because I didn't have any money. But yeah, I mean, it was blues. And then it wasn't until later that I really started to get into soul music. I mean, it was just something that you heard on the radio, you know, Booker T and Otis Redding and all that kind of stuff. But it wasn't until I was well into my 20s that I really started learning more and more about soul music.
It's funny how we do that. I mean, some of us do that. I was the same way. You were talking before about even early Beatles stuff. A lot of that was, you know, Little Richard, or they were covering girl group songs and whatever. But yeah, I was always, once I realized that, I wanted to go back and hear all that stuff too, the original stuff and deeper and deeper back. And it's great.
Yeah. It's kind of like an archaeological, how do you say that?
Archaeological? I have trouble with that too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a dig, you know, you start to go, "Oh, really?" I can remember hearing certain things or listening to something in my room, and my dad would peek his head in and say, "Hey, you know, that sort of sounds like Muddy Waters." That I'd be listening to maybe, you know, Led Zeppelin or something.
Drenched in blues.
Yeah. Yeah.
It really was.
So it was always kind of this cool thing to be able to go, "Oh man, that's where that came from." Like when I found out about T-Bone Walker, that was just such a mind blower.
Oh yeah.
Oh man, that's where Chuck Berry got that stuff from.
Yeah, I was just also thinking about William Clark, blues harmonica player. My dad's no longer with us, but he played harmonica most of his life. But he and his group, he had a small like quartet, but they played mostly older standards and stuff. But I know he had an appreciation for blues harmonica. He liked like Charlie Musselwhite and a handful of blues players. But yeah. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Hey, I want to talk about Plug. Plug makes it easy for you to purchase the personal technology you need at 40 to 70% off retail pricing. What can you get from Plug? Certified pre-owned devices, including iPhones, Androids, AirPods, Macs, smartwatches, accessories, and more. I originally didn't even want an Apple Watch, but I got one from Plug and I love it. I wear it every day. Your purchase is backed by their unmatched 1-year warranty and 30-day money-back guarantee. One more very cool thing, Plug is dedicated to helping reduce e-waste around the globe. To date, Plug has helped save over 1 million devices from reaching landfills, and they're looking to double that number by 2025. Link to Plug Tech from the show notes and enter code DJFAY to help support this podcast. Plug Electronics. Check it out. Well, after your years with William Clark, you also played with Johnny Dyer, even on a couple of his albums. Was that your first experience being in the recording studio?
No, my first sessions were with William Clark.
Oh, okay.
I played a little bit just on one song on his first Alligator record. I think he just put me on that because I had just joined the band. It was like a charity. Like, come in here and play rhythm on one song and you get your name on the record. He didn't tell me that, but I think that's what happened. Because I was just so green, I could barely play at that point. But I was trying hard. And then after I left William Clark, that was 91, Johnny and I, late 91, Johnny and I started playing together. And I brought Johnny in the studio with the intention of, let's get a cassette recording that we can send to club owners, booking people, try to get us gigs. And, you know, we went in 1 or 2 days, I paid for it, mixed it, put it on a cassette. And I remember sending it, or giving a copy to Rod Piazza, who is a friend of Johnny and mine. And Rod sent it. Rod said, you got to send this around. You should release this. This is great. So I sent it to a few labels, and one of them was Blacktop down in New Orleans. I think I sent it on a Wednesday, and I remember Monday morning early, Hammond Scott waking me up and saying, I want to sign y'all. It just happened that quick. It was just mainly just went in with Johnny and the band and did what we do live, trying to get some gigs.
And you joined the Mighty Flyers, which was Rod Piazza's backing band. You were with a lot of blues harmonica outfits.
Yeah. It just, you know, when you learn the language of backing the harmonica, then, and I love it. That's the thing. Like, some guitar players kind of begrudgingly learn that language because it's a gig to them. And that's cool. I get that. But I'm a huge Little Walter and George Smith, big Walter fan. I love that music, especially Little Walter. So when I was playing with William Clark, I would practice for hours along to cassette tapes of Walter, Sonny Boy, George Smith, Jimmy Rogers, that kind of stuff, because I enjoyed it and I wanted to get good at that interplay between the guitar and the harmonica.
Right.
And there's a specific way of playing. And then if you're the 23-year-old kid who can really back a harp well, the other harp players start talking about you. And then, you know, I mean, I've played with a lot of harmonica players because of that.
That's so great. Well, your first solo album was Lookout in 96, I think. Mm-hmm. Mostly, or actually, well, it's all instrumental tracks, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that led to solo career.
Well, it was the funny thing about that whole thing is that, you know, I was doing these records with Johnny and booking the tours and buying the van and, you know, putting my own money into the recording. I was just trying, my theory was like, wow, you can't just sit around and wait for someone to discover you and sign you and do all this stuff for you. I basically knew that, you know, in my 20s. So I was working my tail off doing that stuff. And then when I decided to go with Rod Piazza, I called Hammond Scott at Blacktop and told him, and he said, oh yeah, that's great. You know, Johnny's in favor of you going with Rod. Johnny Dyer was, he was a guy that he was just as happy or happier playing a local gig and being able to stay home, you know, sleep in his own bed as he was on the road. He was older and he had already retired. He'd been a truck driver for 30 years. And he was happy for me to go with Rod. And then right there on the spot, Hammond said, "Well, I think we should put a Rick Holmstrom record out." And it had never even occurred to me. And he was the one who said, "Well, you don't sing, so you might as well, let's do an instrumental record." And so we took some of the instrumentals that I had put on the two Johnny Dyer records, and we put those on the record, and then I went in and cut a bunch more stuff. And I didn't even start singing until like a year or so after that.
Well, I hold Mavis Staples in such high regard. I loved the Staples Singers and Pop Staples, and Mavis is just such a shining star in gospel and soul, and she's a civil rights hero. Your trio, which is you, Steve McGallion on drums, and Gregory Boaz on bass, have been touring with Mavis for what, like 17 years now?
Well, I have. I've been with Mavis 17 years. Yeah. These guys started in 2000. We had a little, you know, we've had changeover over the 17 years. But Steve, the drummer, Galleon and I have been in bands together since 91.
Oh, wow.
And he and Greg, the bass player, have been in bands together all that time, too. We just hadn't all overlapped into the same band until around 2000.
Gotcha. And you appeared on several of Mavis's albums, including the Grammy Award winning You Are Not Alone.
Yep. Yep.
And I heard that on occasion Mavis refers to you as Pops Junior.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't. That's still mind blowing to me, but I don't know what to say about that. There is no Pops Junior.
But it was something else.
Yeah. She makes me feel good. Sure. I love her.
Well, over the years backing Mavis, you've toured with Bob Dylan, Bonnie Raitt, Trombone Shorty, Ziggy Marley. I know I'm leaving some out, but just an incredible list of greats. Must have been mm-hmm. something sharing the stage or being part of that.
Well, yeah. I mean, when we first started with Mavis, there wasn't a whole lot going on right then because she'd been in the Staple, you know, unlike Aretha, who early on created her own brand, her own thing, Mavis stayed with the Staple Singers and would occasionally do solo records, but she didn't really create that brand. So it took us a little while to kind of get it back, to get the awareness. And people like Bonnie and Jeff Tweedy, and then, of course, Dylan later were just huge in shining the light on her, especially Bonnie, you know, well, Jeff also. So those were definitely heady moments, you know, to be playing the Greek Theater or the Hollywood Bowl or Red Rocks and places like that with these artists opening for these people. It was a lot of fun. I mean, just because I started playing and touring in vans without seats in the back and, you know, playing in really crummy, cold clubs, you know, in Canada. It's like going on the road in Canada in the winter because it was work, you know, and we'd be in these drafty vans without back seats. We'd bring lawn chairs or bean bags. And to go from that, just because you loved playing the music so much, to all of a sudden, you know, your friends are coming out to see you at the Hollywood Bowl or at Red Rocks or something is, you know, it's really a great feeling. And you know, I'm thankful to Bonnie and people like that, and of course Mavis for those experiences.
Yeah, I meant to mention Jeff Tweedy. It's still mind blowing to me, and I know a lot of people from here in St. Louis. I mean, he was from across the river, but he, you know, we'd go see Uncle Tupelo in tiny clubs here in St. Louis, mm-hmm. and he even worked at a local record store here in St. Louis for quite a while. And yeah, just the Wilco's rise to fame. And I get a real big bang out of seeing when Jeff Tweedy and Mavis are on stage.
Yeah.
Well, I mentioned you playing on some of her albums, but she appeared on your album, Cruel Sunrise.
Yeah, that was nice of her. She came in and sang on a couple songs on that record, and her and her sister Yvonne showed up at the session and blew the minds of the engineer. You know? Really? Mavis Staples is going to come in and sing on your record? Yep. I don't think the guy, my friend Doug Boehm, I don't think he believed it until he saw it happen. You know? And then just to hear her voice.
Wow. Man.
Yeah, it's been, we've made records with Tweety, with Matt Ward, M Ward, and Ben Harper, Sun Little. It's been a great experience to be able to get in the studio and make music with Mavis, not just on the road, but in the studio. I mean, there's a reason why Prince called her the voice.
Yeah.
She's just got this certain thing that she brings to it. It's undeniable, unmistakable Mavis.
Yeah. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I try to find my personality or my identity in the music the best I can. And by the fact that I am such a blues advocate, I mean, you know, usually the interpretation turns out a little bit closer to the blues side, you know? But I just love the music, and I'm just so happy that, you know, people still can find some appreciation for what I do.
That's blues man Larry McRae, a fine guitarist and a fine singer. My talk with Larry is available on Frets. Hope you'll check it out.
Well, I was born in Arkansas. Come up feeding hogs and baling straw.
Hi, this is Rick Holmstrom, and you're listening to Frets with DJ Faye.
Well, in 2014, you and Mavis performed for President Obama for the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act. What an honor and thrill that had to have been.
Yeah, that was something. It was in Austin at the LBJ Museum. I think it's on the University of Texas campus, if I'm not mistaken. And the first night we were there, we played before Bill Clinton spoke. They have this green room in the back. And that night, everybody that was there, I mean, Mavis was there, John Lewis, Dr. King's daughter, I forgot what her name is. And of course, I'm standing there just like Mavis introduced me to John Lewis and told John that I had read his book. And he just looked at me like, really? and started talking to me. That was quite a thrill. I was pretty much just trying to stand back and be a flower on the wall, I guess, you know. But I'm standing there and I feel this tap on my shoulder and I look over and it's Bill Clinton sticking his hand out. Hi, I'm Bill.
Wow.
Like, yeah, I know who you are. And I remember him just kind of quietly murmuring to himself, like kind of walking in circles. And he was looking at his hand and he had a couple of notes in his hand, like he was going to get up there and give a speech in a minute. But it was just a couple of bullet points. And man, he really delivered this incredible speech just off the top of his head. Just, I'll never forget that. But the backstage that night, the first night, was really fun and a lot of people in there. And then, of course, the next night was President Obama, and there was no one backstage but me and Mavis because of Secret Service. And we went and played We Shall Overcome. And we were walking off the stage and I've got my guitar, and Mavis, we're just walking along. And I remember looking up and seeing all these men kind of running towards us and realize, oh, that shit, that's the Secret Service. Like, and then I saw Michelle walk up and see Mavis, and they hugged. And then a couple seconds later, the president came up and he said, well, let's get a photo. And I kind of stepped to my right thinking, oh, I'll get out of the way, you know. And he goes, no, come on over here. Come get in here. And he puts his arm around me, and they took a photo. And it was so cool because, you know, it would have been easy. They're all Chicago, you know, and it would have made a lot of sense for it just to be the Obamas and Mavis. But it was pretty cool that President Obama, like, pulled me into the photo. And, you know, so that was a great moment.
I love that. That's great.
Yeah. I felt very included the whole time. And I was, you know, it was remarkable to me because it would have been easy for them to have sort of excluded me as just being the hired guitar player for the night.
No, that's so great. Wow. Well, your latest album, Get It, am I right that some of that was recorded in Steve McGallion's garage?
Yeah. A lot of times we rehearse in his garage at a real low volume just to work on arrangements and stuff. And it was the pandemic. So Steve and I and Greg and I started getting together in there and just like on a little hard drive recorder, trying to get sounds and record and save money and, you know, just be creative making music during the pandemic. That's kind of why we did that. I mean, sonically, I think we would have preferred to have been in the studio, but I couldn't afford it. And we were going a little nuts. You know, we needed something to do.
It was a strange time.
Yeah.
I read somewhere that you wanted to make an album for good times, barbecues, car rides, and pajama parties.
Did I say that? Oh, God.
Maybe I'm misquoting it.
No, I mean, that sounds about right. Yeah, I mean, and the record before that is this record called See That Light, and that was at the beginning of the pandemic. And there's some dark moments on that record just because I was like everybody trying to process the whole thing. And by the time we got done recording and mixing and then putting out that record and doing press for it, when I started into the instrumental record, Get It, I just wanted that record to be fun. So it was like, hey, you got some friends coming over, barbecuing, whatever, and you're feeling like your Booker T and the MGs or Meters Records, or you've heard those too many times, maybe give this a shot. That's all I was really thinking, is let's have a good time type of instrumental record. And I love this trio so much. I love playing with Greg and Steve, that it's just like the perfect place for me to do my thing and have the dynamics. And they just play with so much dynamics that it's really fun to play with them.
Looking to buy a guitar, an amp, pedals? Find great deals on all of these, as well as audio and recording gear, at Reverb.com. You can also sell your gear through Reverb. They have great articles about music gear and bands. And Reverb believes music makes the world a better place. That's why they created Reverb Gives, that provides youth music education programs all over the world with the instruments they need to make music. Link to Reverb through Frets with DJ Fay in the show notes for this episode. Well, tour dates are coming up right around the corner, with March shows in Miami and Tarzana, then Colorado, then some European dates this summer.
Yeah, and then we do, after Europe, we do a short run of dates with Norah Jones.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a good mixture of stuff. We've got our own festival shows, and we got Europe, and then we've toured with Norah. We've worked with Norah a few times before, and she's a big Mavis fan, and we were huge fans of her and her band. She's got Brian Blade on drums in her band, so it's just a joy for me every night to get done playing when we're with her and know that I get to watch Brian Blade from a few feet away from him. He's a master. Just talk about dynamics. And that guy is incredible.
Well, I saw that you're scheduled to play Union Chapel in London with Mavis. I love that venue. I went in 2015, and What a beautiful place. And it's a really nice size too. I was in second row, but I looking around, I think any seat in that chapel would be great. It was really intimate, and I'm envious, and I'm wishing I could get over there for that show.
Yeah, we did a live record there a few years ago. We recorded two nights, and since, I don't know how many years we've done this, probably this might maybe our fourth or fifth summer of playing multiple nights at Union Chapel. And it's just, it's all wood, you know. It's just, you can't go wrong as long as you don't play too loud in that place. You know, I'll bring a it's obviously a fly-in gig for me, so I get a backline rented reissue AC-15 box AC-15, and that's really the perfect size amp for that room, you know. And the other thing that's really great about that place and places like it is that the audience is right up on us. So
yeah,
Mavis is so old school. Like when we play a festival where there's a moat in front of us, where there's, you know, a 10-foot area where they've got it fenced off and there's only a couple security guys in there, she doesn't like it because it kills the interaction with the front few rows.
So
when we get to a place like Union Chapel, it's just basically like everybody's in with us, and there's a lot of interaction, there's a lot of feeling there.
Well, I don't even know. How old is Mavis?
Well, she is, I'm sure she would be fine with me saying this, but she's she's 84 years old right now. And this summer she turns 85. And it's funny that you should ask that, because they're planning a big 85th birthday celebration for Mavis here in LA at the YouTube Theater.
Nice.
In the middle of April. I think it's April 18th. And it's kind of an impressive roster of stars that are coming. The Chris Stapleton, Black Pumas, Hozier, Jackson Brown, Jeff Tweedy, Norah Jones, Taj Mahal. I mean, and many more. And I think they're going to add some more too. That there's a few that they haven't even announced yet. So that's going to be exciting. And I don't know, there's talk there might be a show towards the end of the summer or the fall in another place for her 85th birthday. It's something that we did one in Chicago when she turned 75, and then we did three shows when she turned 80. We did one at the Apollo, one at the Ryman in Nashville, and then one in LA. So it's always fun because, you know, people, I think a lot of artists, put it this way, she had a real big influence on a lot of people musically. And so it's always fun to see who turns out to, you know, pay tribute to her.
That's fantastic. That is great news.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to playing with some of these, well, all these people.
Well, Rick, I really appreciate you doing this today, and great to finally get to talk to you.
Likewise. It's my pleasure, and keep doing it.
All right.
It's a great thing.
Well, I'll try to get out on the road and see you guys.
That'd be cool, yeah. I mean, we played St. Louis before. Let me think. Is there a Sheldon?
Yeah, it's a beautiful theater.
Yeah, we've played that. And I remember one time early on when I was with Mavis, just Mavis and I went and played with like an orchestra at one of those theaters, which was a really unusual, you know, to look behind you and see this giant orchestra. But yeah, so we've had our fun in St. Louis, and as St. Louis Jimmy would say, I've had my fun. If I don't get well, no more.
All right. Well, thanks, man.
Thank you. Take
Thanks for tuning in to Frets with DJ Fay. If you like the show, you can subscribe for free at most podcast platforms. Hope you'll join me again next time. Stay tuned.